is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, the next battleground appears to be whether to open the United States back up for business or not. The battle lines are drawn, and you can see those political battles that are happening. You know, a lot of people were wondering if we could come together. We've seen that happen. It's always a reference point when we talk about 9/11. And that is really the question today. Can the parties come together to do what's right for America? Friends, we have a big show today with terrific people on here. I look forward to talking to you all today. We're going to get into all of the top stories here on those battles we talked about in the reopening of the U.S. economy. We'll talk about also the politics of hydroxychloroquine and some of the remedies that the doctors are trying to do to save lives. We have a new contributor to the platform, Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet, as a medical doctor, joining us on the program to talk about that. Also, Dr. Jay Lair and the Martinellis will be here. Lasting changes in America. There are some changes that are going to hit us here that we're going to take forward from this pandemic. You know, life will change just ahead. So let's get started here with the top stories. I'd like to do that, please, with Ilana Friedman. Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst. She's a political commentator, host of the Friedman Report, and it's great to have Ilana. And Dr. Carol Swain is here. Dr. Swain is an award-winning political scientist, a former professor of political science and professor of law at Vanderbilt University. Both Ilana and Dr. Swain have tremendous books out there. You can find on Amazon or in the America Out Loud bookstore, as always. Dr. Swain is host of Be the People here as well. So let's start with the reopening here. Interesting. Ilana, you have a very interesting article up there. You call it The Reopening of America, a no-win choice for the president. And let me start with this. You say here, on the one hand, the health and safety of the American people is paramount. The pandemic has ravaged our country in a way that hasn't been seen in over a century. But on the other hand, our economy can't weather an extended shutdown without dragging the country into a prolonged and painful depression. And you kind of get into this, well, we've been talking about it, Ilana, where the economy is also causes some danger, where there's a lot of depression. We understand that domestic abuse is up. You've got suicide. You've got other problems in there happening. And you say here, it is remarkable that despite all of the nonstop criticism that Trump has been facing since the beginning of his presidential campaign in 2016, Donald Trump has kept to the path he promised, guided by his original platform and strongly supported by what may prove to be a silent majority of Americans. I like that comment. I wanted to start there because it is remarkable how this president has handled it, Ilana, with this pandemic.
Malcolm, I really think that the way the president has handled this, with the exception of his Twitter account, which is a totally different story, but the way he has handled it as president has been extraordinary. And he has been fighting first of all, the left, who attacks him mercilessly no matter what he does. And secondly, he has a problem with the people who he trusts. They're not giving him information that he can use. They're giving him, in fact, bad information, like the World Health Organization, mm-hmm. that told him there was nothing to worry about for 2 months before they finally agreed that this was, in fact, a pandemic, and we need to start worrying. Yeah. Now, how could he make intelligent decisions if he did not have the information he needed? And that's the problem that he's been facing, and the criticism against him has been totally unfair because he did not have it, and yet he put in place the ban against travelers from China, which right. and that was at the end of January, which was awesome.
Well, the criticism has started already, obviously, with the reopening here, Dr. Swain. And let me read you this here. Representative Adam Schiff, after the president spoke about reopening the economy on Thursday evening, he tweeted this out. There's no way to safely reopen without massive testing. Yet, we're barely tested more people this week than last. And hospitals continue to report serious bottlenecks. If Trump ignores the experts and forces a premature reopening, even more Americans will die. There's a political shift where they're trying to blame not only the pandemic, but the deaths directly on the office of the president.
Well, the thing that concerns me is they keep making references to, quote, science. The problem there is that the scientists are part of academia, which means that they more than likely leftists. And certainly the people that work for the CDC. And so the president, I agree with Alana that the president is not being advised by people who are offering him good, neutral information. Unfortunately, a lot of the information comes from people who have political or financial ties, you know, in some sort of way to keeping the pandemic going for the vaccine, because there's financial profit there for certain people. And politically, the Democrats would like nothing better than to keep the country shut down through the election. They want the mail-in ballots so they can cheat as usual. And so everything is political. I've been dismayed by listening to Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx advise the president, because they have ties to Bill Gates. They have ties, you know, to CDC and many individuals that have a whole different worldview than most conservatives, certainly, and I believe the president.
You know, Carol, there's a lot of back and forth. There is no love lost, obviously, between Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the president. I mean, this relationship has gotten about as tense as any political relationship in our lifetime that we've ever seen. I mean, even back in the day when Reagan would fight with Tip O'Neill, and they would have this big dispute, they would still, at the end of the day, get along and go out for a drink. Now, right now, the hatred is so deep. So President Trump tweeted, listen to this here. He says, crazy, Nancy Pelosi, you are a weak person. You are a poor leader. You are the reason America hates career politicians like yourself. Come back to Washington and do your job. So what the president did there is he tweeted the comment about Nancy from Sean Hannity is what he did, Carol. My point is the Twitter feed. Ilana was just talking about the tenseness of that Twitter feed. It's a different way he uses the Twitter feed. You know, I think a lot of people are very careful, people that really love the president, to support the president, they're very careful not to criticize him. And most of our listeners don't like criticism toward this president. They get really tense when you do that, and they'll disown you in a hot second, you know. And that worries me as well, Carol, because sometimes there's a lack of truth in all of this. But these tweets can be pretty sharp from the president, don't you think? Or should he fire back with Nancy? Because the speaker is certainly saying a lot of pretty ugly things about the president as well.
We know that candidate Trump was also tweeting things that many people thought would cause him to lose the election because it wasn't presidential. And so I don't think there's been a change in his behavior. The media, we use all of those, you know, to say that this is not a person that should be leading, you know, a first world country or should be leading America. But at the end of the day, I think it's important for people who love the president to speak truth, even if that truth seems like a criticism of the president. Mm. And I believe that Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci, that they are people that don't have the president's best interests at heart. And I am very dismayed by the fact that they keep referring to science and the models and the ventilators when all the evidence suggests that the ventilators may be killing more people than they're saving. And when it comes to the models, we know that the models that were used to shut down the country were flawed. It's not clear to me that we made the right decision when we shut down the country in the first place. We could have quarantined and isolated the people who were sick and put in other precautions. And so the mitigation strategy itself is a Bill Gates strategy, I would say, and it was planned out like years ago. There's a 2012 research paper from Germany that laid out this whole strategy of dealing with this pandemic in the way that we have adopted. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this has been something that people who have always wanted control over the masses, that they realized that with this, with a pandemic, that they would be able to get away with things that under normal circumstances would never be tolerated. And we know that we lost enormous freedoms after 9/11, but we did not come anywhere near the loss of freedoms that we're experiencing today.
God, that is well said. Everything you just said there, including your comment about the way people should be honest in regards to the president, I really value what you just said. Right now, we're seeing these protests really come up all over the country. Michigan, Governor Whitmer is having a lot of troubles there. People are rebelling there at the state capitol. You've got it in, Minnesota, Virginia, North Carolina, really all over the country at this point here. People are now getting restless, Ilana. They want their freedom back. As Carol was just saying, enough is enough. And we lost so many freedoms after 9/11. Americans are not willing to lose those freedoms any further. What do you say to that?
The shutdown protests, such as we had in Michigan this week, were quite amazing. You know, I've been studying this for quite a long time, but I was astonished at the force of these protests. They had over 10,000 cars that came to the state capitol to protest, and people were keeping their distance inside their cars, but there were 10,000 or more of them, according to the state police. So people are really upset, and particularly in Michigan, Governor Whitmer's, the things she put in place to keep people shut down were really draconian. They were worse than anything, I think. They're probably the worst in the country. I was reminded, however, that in 100 years ago, when we had the Spanish flu, the government shut down everything. People were confined to their homes, not unlike this, but there were signs posted on the doors, quarantine. It was even worse than now. And yet we got back our freedoms eventually. It didn't last. And I think that this will happen again. Mm-hmm. Now, in time, we will get our freedoms back. But we have a problem because we have, instead of bringing the people of America together, we have people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and others who are using this pandemic to drive a wedge further.
Because, Ilana, we're in an election year. And we have to remember that these people are, all they have right now is if you really want to look at the opposite side of this thing on the other foot, this is all they have is the pandemic. They don't have any more impeachment going on or Russia collusion. You can't use those anymore. So all you can use, we're in a 24/7 news cycle about this pandemic. If you're going to beat the president in November, all you can, and I just want to remind everybody of this point right now, because it's a, what are you going to pin him on? You're going to talk about you don't like his color shoes, you don't like the ties he's wearing, the way he parts his hair. I mean, so you're going to use the pandemic and you're going to find whatever fault you can, and nobody should lose sight of this. So in the face of extraordinary leadership, the president is still going to be questioned and mocked a great deal here. And I will say this, you just said the key word, Ilana, draconian. And I'm going to tell you now, people, there are a lot of draconian steps being done from a lot of these local dictators in charge, these mayors, these governors, these cities and county municipalities. You know what I'm speaking about? A lot of run by a lot of socialist left Democrats, quite frankly. And people are losing their freedoms. I will say to you, this is a big wake-up call for America right this moment.
I'd like to disagree a little bit with Ilana in the sense that this is not 1918. And at that time, America was not on the verge of socialism because at that time, we valued our freedoms. Now, I believe that the country has changed to such a degree that once freedoms are removed, they will not be easily restored, because even before the pandemic, our nation was in trouble.
Right. And we've seen the history of what you're speaking about. Yeah, that's been happening.
That in 1918, we were in the middle of a world war. The pandemic was really sidelined by the world war on the one hand, in the news, for example.
Wow.
But on the other hand, we were on a war footing. So we were, the government felt it was absolutely necessary to put these measures in place. So we had a very complicated situation then. I agree with Dr. Swain that this is absolutely a different situation.
Because liberty is at stake right now, and every American listening to this
yes.
knows exactly what we're talking about here, what all of us are talking about. You know, the president has been, he knows what's happening here. You know, you got to say this again. I got to say this, and we got to move on and talk about China. But this president, when it comes to liberty and freedom, this is no dictator. This is a man who loves freedom, loves patriotism, and loves America. And he put out on the Twitter feed again, liberate Virginia, liberate Michigan, liberate Minnesota. And of course, that upset some people, but he knows the point here, and he's going to stand with the American people. And so, you know what? It is what it is. Let's talk about China. Ilana, China has raised their death count in Wuhan by 50%. They went from 2,000, exactly. They went from 2,500 dead to 3,800, which would really be in the drop in the bucket compared to what the standards are of how many have been killed around the world. We obviously don't believe these numbers still, correct?
Let me give you an example. Here are some numbers. There are 74 crematoria in Wuhan. They were processing at the height of this, they were processing at least, they were running two shifts of 12 hours each. Each of these crematoria were processing more than 100 bodies a day. Now, not all of them died of the coronavirus, but probably most of them did. And if you do the numbers, 74 times 100 for 2 months, and it comes out to almost 500,000 people.
Yeah.
That's not 30,000. That's not 20,000 or 10,000 or even 80,000. They are lying about the numbers. They've been doing it from the beginning. And I think we have to be very, very open and clear about it. They are lying to us still. They are going to be lying to us tomorrow. We have to take that into account when we deal with them.
There are class action lawsuits being filed against the Chinese government, and there are at least four federal class action lawsuits. Now, is this more show? Because really, as you know, we have the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act of 1976, the FSIA. It really provides immunity, Ilana. It's a blanket security for these lawsuits. You really can't sue foreign governments under most circumstances. I want to read you this fast tweet and get a quick opinion from you on this. Donna sent this message in to as a listener. She said, so let me get this straight. The new official story in the bio lab located in Wuhan, China at 666 Gawson Road. I did not know that address, by the way, but that's what she's saying here, which is owned in part by George Soros, just happened to release coronavirus on the world accidentally, and it was in no way a bioweapon or planned. Got it. Now, what do you say to that? I don't know if any of that's true or not.
Well, the information that I have, Malcolm, is that it was released accidentally in a laboratory accident. Somebody carried it to the outside world because their protocols for laboratory safety were very relaxed and not very effective. And that's what happened. And it happened sometime in mid-November. Now, there's a backstory to that, but I won't get into it because this didn't start there. It started in southern China. But the point is that this was a virus that was taken from a bat originally that was related to the SARS virus, and it was engineered with HIV input and also other things that they were working on. I'm not a biochemist, so I don't want to get into that. But the point is that this was something that was being engineered as a bioweapon. That's the only explanation for it. You don't create like this.
Right.
Without a military force.
And there's a lot of evidence that points to what you're saying to now. We've talked about this on the platform. Let me change up. I want to talk to you about one of the political battles, Carol, that's going on in Washington. And that is obviously the Senate had adjourned, and you've got Congress fighting over the small business funding, the Paycheck Protection Act. So what happened is the first $350 billion went very quick. That was a big success, they say. And now they need another $250 billion to prop the program up to get to small business. What's happening is there's a fight because they're trying to put more things in the bill. Nancy Pelosi calls it negotiating, which she did successfully the first time with all the dollars for the art programs and all the other stuff that had nothing to do with this pandemic virus. Chuck Schumer comes out, the Senate minority leader, and says, he's optimistic about reaching this agreement over the weekend here, he's saying. What's the bottom line on this, Carol, this craziness that's going on? We're trying to get money to the American people.
Well, again, it's politics. We know that the Democrats believe that anytime there's a crisis, that should be exploited to extract whatever they believe they need. And so it's a shakedown because of the opportunity presented by the crisis. So that is part of what is taking place. I think that the fact that the money was spent so quickly, that there is a problem because there are news reports that there were some huge multi-million dollar businesses that got money, whereas the small businesses that it was meant to support, they didn't. And so I think that that's going to be a political issue for the future, the kind of criteria that was being used when they dispersed the money that was first allotted for the program.
I mean, they're going to have to come to some sort of agreement. But you know, Carol, they're going to put other things in that bill. You know that's not going to come through as a clean bill, right?
No, it never does. And even though with Congress, all amendments are supposed to be germane, they have relaxed the germaneness rule to the point that it is meaningless. It seems that you can attach anything to any kind of legislation, and that's problematic.
You know, there was a story coming out of California, Carol, just in the last day or so, where Governor Gavin Newsom, who's been working pretty well with the administration, surprisingly enough, many of the Democratic governors had at this time of crisis, to the dismay of many. But he put out a $125 million assistance fund for illegal immigrants who have lost work due to the virus. This has really gotten under a lot of people's skin out in California. And Lori on Twitter put a message out there that says, "Does anyone else find this as disturbing as I do? I am tired of our tax dollars going to give free handouts to illegals. It must stop. Deport them back to their own countries." The California governor, again, announced this big news here just yesterday. What do you think about this?
Well, it's problematic, but Democrats have been doing that all along, and they have so many illegal aliens in their communities that I assume that they feel like that those people, if they don't give them something, that they could end up with more crime, more unrest. And no one wants to see any group, you know, suffer. And they're here. And until we do something about the problem, I think that governments that have invited them, that have set up sanctuary cities, that they're going to feel compelled to provide something.
A big thank you here to Dr. Carol Swain, Ilana Friedman. So there's a lot of controversy about this hydroxychloroquine. And you also hear another drug, remdesivir. And these are drugs that are being used on the front lines. I want to talk about that next with a physician who is working with Senator Ron Johnson and our political leaders to get something approved and with the FDA. And there already is approval with the FDA, but there's a lot of kickback. And a lot of states are preventing the use of these drugs, and people are dying unnecessarily from the lack of this drug being available, you know. And then what about the lasting changes in America? Stay right there. There'll be more Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. We are a grassroots movement of patriots, blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. So you've been hearing a great deal about the drug hydroxychloroquine, and also this remdesivir also is another drug to treat this COVID-19, this disease, this virus, this killer. It's actually being called the invisible virus by many. It's a silent killer for many. And we want to talk about those drugs next, and also some of the political ramifications of this. Let me bring on here now Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet. She's an independent physician specializing in preventive and climacteric medicine. She's a powerful advocate, really, for patients and speaks nationally and internationally on health and wellness. Offices out of Tucson, Arizona, and Dallas, Texas. Pleased to announce here, Dr. Vliet will be a contributor and a weekly columnist and a commentator here at America Out Loud. Her first column, in fact, her op-ed, is on America Out Loud here today as you listen to this. It is entitled, "The Invisible Virus is a War. Doctors Need Freedom to Use Hydroxychloroquine to Save Lives." So I'd like to start here. There's an interesting story out of CNN, Elizabeth Cohen and Dr. Manali, and they say this, Dr. Vliet. It says, President Trump is wrong in so many ways about hydroxychloroquine and studies about this. Here are the facts, they say. Over the past month, he's made many optimistic statements about HCQ. That's the abbreviation for the drug. CNN has fact-checked the president multiple times, such as here, here, and here, and found that he's being unrealistically enthusiastic. Physicians, including Trump's own advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, has emphasized that in order to know if a drug is going to work and be safe, it has to be studied in clinical trials. It might work, but it might not. Here's the problem, Dr. Vliet, that I think that's happening here, is that people are literally dying. And from what I understand, there's a history with the HCQ, with the hydroxychloroquine, that is had been effective for many, many years, is what I understand. And I'm not sure what the message is here from these people. Would they prefer that patients just die? Would that be a better alternative? Or, you know, do we try something that might work? Talk to me on what the impact of this drug is and what's happening.
Well, this is a classic example of, I think the people you quoted clearly are placing their agenda of discrediting the president at all cost above human life. And it is very clear. I will categorically say that it is dangerous and irresponsible to keep perpetuating the wrong information about hydroxychloroquine. It is a medicine that is used around the world and has been since 1955, and its sister drug, chloroquine, was approved in 1934 by the US FDA to treat malaria. The World Health Organization, whether people trust them or not, they have listed hydroxychloroquine as one of the safest, most effective, cheapest medications on the World Health Organization of list, and it is used in underdeveloped countries because of its safety, because it's cheap, because it's so effective at malaria treatment, as well as lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. So for the World Health Organization to be listing it as safe and effective, it's ludicrous for the CNN commentators to say that President Trump is wrong. I suspect they haven't read anything. And in addition, our own NIH, going back 20 years, did studies looking at the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine against the SARS virus, which is one of the coronaviruses. It is designated SARS-CoV-1. And we knew then, 20 years ago, that hydroxychloroquine blocked the virus from attaching to our body cells, and it blocked the virus from, once it got in the cells, it blocked the virus from multiplying. And now we know other mechanisms by which it worked. So it is, and what is coming from other countries, Malcolm, that's so tragic with this wrong information, is that every other country using it, India, Brazil, Italy, France, Germany, Switzerland, Israel, Canada, Australia, all of the countries that are using hydroxychloroquine to treat COVID-19 patients, they are finding across the board that it works best if it's given early in the illness. I just got a paper from researchers at the major Preventive Medicine Disease Institute in Sao Paulo, Brazil. They showed that it cuts hospitalization by two-thirds in their patient population if they started hydroxychloroquine before the seventh day after symptoms began. And we're being told in this country by the FDA, state governors, and state medical boards that doctors have to wait until someone's critically ill in the hospital.
That's the narrative they're putting out there, you're saying, the politicians, some of the governors and mayors.
Which not just a narrative, it's a rule. The FDA specified it could be used on an emergency basis for certain hospitalized patients. And then state governors and state medical boards have issued orders and rules that the physicians in their states had to follow. And those rules at the state level are overriding the FDA legally allowing doctors to prescribe for outpatients off-label.
Did the FDA approve it just for the, like those really emergency situations, or is it an approved drug by the FDA to treat this?
It was already approved. It's been approved. Hydroxychloroquine was approved in 1955. Right. We send our troops into combat in malaria-prone areas with hydroxychloroquine supply for prophylaxis against malaria. So no, it's been approved for years.
But wasn't there a recent approval with the COVID-19 is what I'm asking? Is that, have they acted recently on the COVID-19, Dr. Vliet, or is that?
They did.
Okay.
They did on March 28th, issued an emergency use approval. And unfortunately, the language was focused on hospitalized patients.
I see.
And the FDA commissioner said 2 weeks ago, well, doctors can prescribe it outpatient off-label. Mm-hmm. Well, true. That's legally allowed by the FDA. But what he didn't realize is that the state governors stepped in and issued their own orders more restrictive than the FDA.
You're working with political leaders right now, I understand. And I think, are you trying to get the FDA to do another ruling on this, to change the wording?
Yes, we've been working around the clock on that for the last several weeks. Senator Johnson from Wisconsin, who's chairman of the Senate Oversight Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, called me. He was so concerned about what was happening. He heard a radio interview I did on April 8th. He called me himself on April 9th, and he has been working tirelessly with us getting, I'm sending him medical information constantly from other countries and from the U.S., and from patients and doctors, and he has been working tirelessly to get the FDA to change their language, and then the next step is to work with the president to get directives for the state governors to follow the FDA emergency approval for both inpatient and outpatient.
Well, there's a lot of pushback happening right now from coast to coast, and even with all the protests and other things that are happening. But what's happening is the governors, the mayors, the local municipalities appear to be pushing back, is what we're seeing, Dr. Vliet. They're pushing back, and they are putting a lot of, you know, we just talked about this in the opening stories on the program with the protests and what they're doing. But here's the thing. The reports we're hearing now of these medical professionals, I'm hearing reports, and I'd like you to verify if this is true or not, that they're being threatened and harassed, and even in some cases, their licenses are under attack. Is there truth to that?
Oh, there absolutely is. I was on a conference call with doctors April 2nd from around the country. The following week, I was on another conference call with doctors from across the country. And we are hearing from doctors in multiple states that they've gotten threatening letters from their state medical boards for if they prescribe hydroxychloroquine for COVID-19 patients unless they're in the hospital. Again, that's too late. People need to have this medicine early to prevent a lot of the damage the virus is causing, and it would reduce the need for hospitalization and ventilation, which carry their own risk. No, it's very alarming what's happening. I mean, this is the first time in my entire adult life, and especially my medical career, where we've literally had doctors risking and nurses risking their lives on the front line to treat an infectious illness, and their hands are tied by state medical boards, state governors, and indirectly, the FDA, in fairness, the FDA commissioner, Dr. Hahn, is very concerned about this, and he has said, well, what's the problem? Doctors can legally prescribe off-label if they think the patient needs it and the patient's outpatient. And Senator Johnson has been pushing back, saying, but Dr. Hahn, the state governors are overruling the FDA's allowed off-label prescribing, and doctors can't risk losing their license because then they can't help anyone.
I mean, this drug has been impactful. I mean, I've heard stories, and you tell me, but where lives are absolutely being saved. I mean, I've heard from people directly that this thing saved their life, this drug. So there's some miraculous things happening with this thing, yeah?
Oh, there absolutely are. Look at the series that Dr. Zelenko in New York has put. He has treated over 1,000 patients. Now, I think he started earlier before Cuomo's restrictive order, but Governor Cuomo issued the most restrictive order in the United States. He restricted the use of hydroxychloroquine. You not only had to be in the hospital, you had to be on a clinical trial, which is outrageous in a national emergency, and people are dying. New York has had the most deaths in the country, and yet he has restricted doctors from using the medicine that could save lives.
Governor Cuomo, what other incentive would he have to do it? For what reason? I mean, I'm trying to really rack my, why would he do, I mean, is this purely political? Is that why he does it? Or does he have anything substantial that is why he would make that kind of a move?
Well, I think we've seen by his behavior, he wasn't prepared with ventilators in the state stockpile. States are supposed to have that equipment prepared for their state emergencies.
They blamed all that on the White House, Doctor, right?
I think we've seen a pattern of Andrew Cuomo is escaping responsibility and accountability in his role, and he's trying to blame the president. Wow. And so restricting hydroxychloroquine was doing the opposite of what President Trump had said might give hope. Mm-hmm. I think it's unconscionable what is happening, and I think it's terrible. I would say gross negligence that we have so many governors stepping in on political reasons to restrict doctors at a time people are dying. Yeah. I really am just furious about it, and so are most of the doctors I talk with.
And you're to be commended, because I got to tell you, I am just thrilled, because you are on the front lines, and your heart and your soul, I know, are in this fight.
Thank you, Malcolm, and I am very sincere when I say this. All credit to God who guided this effort.
Amen. Amen. I love it. Let me ask you, last moment or so we have, I want to get your opinion on this other drug. I'd like people to hear about it, this remdesivir, I believe it's is correct. Tell me about this drug.
Remdesivir is a very promising antiviral medication newly developed by Gilead Sciences in the U.S., and I actually have familiarity with their other drug because I've been had access to that to treat a kitten with feline coronavirus, which normally is fatal, and the kitten has had a miraculous recovery. But remdesivir has been in limited clinical trials to treat Ebola, but it had not had any clinical trials. Of course, we didn't know about COVID-19 until January 2020. I mean, the Chinese knew about it last fall in 2019, but we didn't know about it. So there's no way there could have been any clinical trials if you have an enemy you don't even know exists. So remdesivir, the FDA quickly approved it for compassionate use and starting clinical trials. Gilead ramped up production. It is in clinical trials actually around the world. University of Chicago is one center, or a Chicago hospital is treating them on a clinical trial, showing good progress. And they've got 125 patients at last count, and it is being used. 2,400 people from around the world, 152 different clinical trial sites all over the world. Gilead has made ramped up production to produce remdesivir and get those patients the treatment on the clinical trial, which is great news, but the results from that won't be available till next year sometime or the year after. And the other difference, hydroxychloroquine, it probably costs less than $10 for a whole course of treatment for COVID-19. It's only a 5-day, 5 or 6-day treatment course. And it's very cheap. It's very effective. Doctors know how to use it because they've been using it safely for rheumatoid and lupus patients for decades, since 1955. Remdesivir has to be given IV. You have to be in the hospital and on IV fluids in order to have that drug administered. And it's not available. And it will end up being very expensive as a new drug. So it's not a realistic possibility.
I didn't realize that the difference in the cost structure of those two drugs, but that is fascinating. You know, friends, the medical community has had to move very quickly, obviously, with no treatment, really known cure for this pandemic wasn't planned. None of this was planned, obviously. And we are to give our hats off here to the entire healthcare community, I will tell you right now. All of the hospitals and the frontline workers from sea to shining sea are absolute heroes, as well as all first responders, quite frankly, in this invisible war, as it's being called here. Well, listen, I want to officially welcome Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet. She is, again, a medical doctor out of Arizona offices in Tucson, Arizona, Dallas, Texas. And you'll hear lots more about her ahead. Her first, again, op-ed is on AmericaOutloud.com today as you're hearing this. It is called "The Invisible Virus is a War. Doctors need freedom to use hydroxychloroquine to save lives." So there it is, and you hear the passion. Now, I will give you a program, a note right now. The doctor, Dr. Vliet, will join me later this week on The Voice of a Nation. We will have much more time to do a deep dive on all of these matters. So join me there. In a lot of social media circles as well, she goes by Dr. Lee, but it's Elizabeth Lee Vliet, MD, and it's a beautiful thing. We're thrilled to have her here. Her voice is badly needed in this fight forward here. Okay, so let's do this, friends. We have this pandemic here going on. We've been hit pretty hard here, but there are going to be some lasting changes in America as we turn the lights back on and as we talk about bringing the country back to life. What are those lasting changes in America, and what about the world? Great discussion next, a panel discussion with three incredible people. We'll be right back in just a moment as Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
What if a new treatment, backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Some of the lasting changes in America. What are some of those lasting changes going to be? And in the world, for that matter, as well. So in other words, what are the scars? Or even better than that, what are the lessons moving forward? You know, we had lessons, you remember, after 9/11, the world changed. And for many, not for the better. A lot of freedoms were lost. A lot of rights were lost. And that's what a lot of people are suspicious now, as we discussed with you early on in the program, about exactly that. I would like to talk to you next about the lasting changes in America and the world. Joining us on the program here is an outstanding group here. Dr. Jay Lehrer is here. He's a senior policy analyst with the International Climate Science Coalition, former science director of the Heartland Institute. Linda Martinelli is here. She's an entrepreneur, business executive, and host, along with her husband, Dr. Ron Martinelli. And they're both here. Talking while married. Now, Dr. Ron is a retired police detective. He's a forensic criminologist and a political analyst, both they are, and host of, again, of Talking While Married. It is a great show, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific on America Out Loud Talk Radio. It is awesome to have this connection here of Jay, Linda, and Ron here. And I'd like to start and talk about the environment, Jay, and I'd like to talk with you initially here, and it's about this. You know, with entire countries being shut down now, the changes in the environment have been pretty significant. And we're starting to see that. I'm starting to see a lot of reports about that. So I guess the first question we should all ask is, let's talk about these changes, Jay. What are you seeing? How big is the reduction, even in basic air pollution? And what's the impact of this?
First of all, the United States has the best environment in the world. We're told by the left that we have air pollution problems, water pollution problems, and the like. We have improved dramatically in the last 30 years. So the drumbeat for the last really 20 years now has been that we're destroying the planet with the use of fossil fuels, which is causing global warming, an entire hoax. That hoax is beginning to fall on deaf ears, especially with the recognition of the public that mathematical models that have driven the COVID-19 virus problem being wrong every day, they're all waking up to the fact that all of the predictions of global warming and climate change are based on mathematical models that are no better at all. So I think one thing positive coming out of this is going to be a short end to the climate change hoax, but replacing it now is going to be the COVID-19 hoax, because while we clearly have had an epidemic that has had disastrous effects on human health around the world, they're going to try to continue to beat this drumbeat to enslave the world over a fear of a virus coming back or other pandemics coming back. The globalists, the leftists want to run the world. When you have $1 billion, what more can you want? You have all the houses you want, all the cars you want. What you want is power over the world. And whether it's George Soros or Jeff Bezos, they're all seeing COVID-19 now as a replacement for the climate change hoax by keeping people in a manner of fear. So you run to the government to save you. This is going to be the new one. Hopefully they'll not succeed. They will succeed for a year or so. Once a vaccine comes forward, perhaps they'll have to go on to another threat. But there'll always be another threat. It's a never-ending battle of good versus evil. And the leftists and the globalists are the devil's army.
Interesting. Boy, that is quite a roundup there. Dr. Ron Martinelli, let's get you to opine now on this here. How do you take what Jay says there and square that up with this pandemic and how we struggle through this, Ron?
What we're seeing across the country is, you know, governors and mayors making orders that aren't constitutionally sound. In other words, they're not voted on by a legislature. They're basically just edicts. And several of the governors and many mayors have, you know, backwalked their initial, you know, orders or laws because they aren't orders or laws. Okay, so orders are orders, but they're not laws, if you understand what I mean. Laws have to be legislated. And so what I'm concerned about is law enforcement personnel going out into the field and citing and arresting people without the constitutional objective standards of proof or the elements of a violation that would be sustained by a trier of fact, in other words, a court. And I don't think, and I'm going to put myself out on a limb right now, but I don't think any of these sites or arrests that come before a jury are we going to see convictions. I think, as a matter of fact, district attorneys may walk them back and not file against these people. But then what that does is it places the law enforcement agencies and the officers who make these sites and arrests subject to civil prosecution. And I'm really concerned about that. I think, you know, we've gone off the deep end in some areas.
Well, it seems to be. I mean, a lot of these people are being empowered, and you both are seeing that. You know, Ron, there's a series of sheriffs out of Michigan. Michigan is having a lot of troubles right now, Governor Whitmer, because people are protesting in a very big way throughout the state and the state capitol. Because, again, many of the rulings and the executive orders she's signing, people believe they're draconian in nature and against the constitutional rights here. But some of the sheriffs actually, I don't know if you've seen this story, but they went into the face of the governor and said they're not going to back these up. They're going to stand with the people. That's kind of a landmark moment.
Well, you know, I stand with those sheriffs because they're absolutely right. The sheriff is the elected official and the chief law enforcement officer for every county. And so and don't forget, citations, arrests, or detentions are all discretionary acts. That means you can't be ordered to make an arrest. You can't be ordered as a law enforcement officer to make a detention. It's a discretionary act. There are very few mandates in any state's penal code that mandate that an arrest will be made. Even for the crime of murder, it's not a mandated arrest. And so when the sheriffs are saying, hey, that's not really what our job is. Our job is to help people. And we don't want to place our deputy sheriffs or our peace officers between the people who we care about in the court system. So, and they're absolutely correct. And I hope that more sheriffs and more chiefs of police stop being the minions of governors, some of which are out of control in this country, because you place everybody at jeopardy when you do that, far more than the coronavirus.
In a very interesting way, it's going to be a pivotal moment for the country, I believe, Linda, because what's happening is people are going to have to decide between their constitutional rights and some of these little dictators in chief of these little towns, communities, and states, for that matter, that are taking matters into their own hands and going in the face against people's constitutional rights. But I think it's going to be interesting as we get into the election season. This could play in a big way. It could be, I think, a very interesting way into the election in 2020, Linda, when Americans realize that their rights are being stripped from them. How do you balance that with health and security and, you know, this pandemic? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't necessarily think a lot of those little dictators are offering health and security to people. I think that they're trying to take advantage of the virus to move forward their agendas. And if you look at Gavin Newsom, you know, giving $125 million to illegal aliens in California, I mean, that's taxpayer money that's hard earned. And it's a human thing to do, but they shouldn't have been there in the first place. So I think that people need to wake up to a lot of things in this country right now, Malcolm.
Yeah.
And the first thing that they need to wake up to is that China is not our friend, and that what they did here to hide this and to obstruct people from investigating has killed hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And we need to look at those issues about bringing things back to America for us to manufacture, and who better to do that than President Trump? So we need to manufacture our own antibiotics, our own drugs, our own PPEs, and be ready for the next pandemic ourselves without having to go to China for these things.
Jay, you brought that up on during the week on The Voice of a Nation. You had said you think that's going to be a real gift back to America, I believe, where a lot of that manufacturing is coming back to the States here.
Yes, we're never going to trust China again as we did, and we're going to stop always going for the lowest cost product and realize we have to be resilient and be able to draw on a product we need at any moment in time and not be cut off in the supply chain by China. So that is a very good thing. A lot of good things are going to come out of this. We're going to be more independent on our own, particularly in manufacturing. As Linda says, we're going to be less trustful of China, which Mr. Trump told us literally on day one. And I think it's going to show in the polls in November. I suspect there'll be a landslide in spite of a tremendous amount of fraudulent voting that the Democrats will create. But I'm hopeful and really confident that there is a percentage of Americans that think objectively with their head and not glued to a party, be it conservative or liberal, and recognize that socialism is a terrible thing, and that they've now lived through a number of months of socialism, which the country's reaction to the COVID-19 virus has been. And they recognize this is not what they want. There are people sitting on couches all over the country that probably once thought, you know, I wouldn't mind taking a long vacation from work, that are now hating it. They are hating a government check. They want to get back to work. So there are a lot of things that are good that are going to come out of it. I think the economy will take at least 3 years to fully recover. But I think we will be subject to the lies of the left much less tomorrow than we were today.
Yeah, so one of the biggest positive denominators, Ron, that's going to come from this, it appears, and I've been focusing a lot on this point here this week, is the fact of what Jay just said. If you love this pandemic, you're going to love socialism, see?
Absolutely agree. And we have to remember that whenever there's opportunities like this, the progressive left, which really, to me, they start to show their colors towards fascism. And it's so interesting because, you know, I do a lot of studying with Antifa and Antifa, you know, anti-fascist, but they actually behave, their language and everything is fascist. And it's the same thing where some of these governors and some of these mayors are moving towards. So they're taking this opportunity of the pandemic and the chaos and the tragedy, and now they're inserting draconian measures. And to me, the thing that I really want to study moving forward, and I think the American people should study, is how is law enforcement going to react to receiving unconstitutional orders.
All right, Linda, right now the kids are learning from home, their online programs. How do you see that being impacted ahead? Because there's a lot of educators that are actually on the front lines and talking about homeschooling as a viable option because the government education, people would argue, is failing America. What do you say to that?
I agree that it's failing America. It's been a big issue with me for a very long time. And I do think that some parents, in many ways, are going to find that this time with their kids and with their family has actually been a really important time. I'm hoping that they took the time to reintroduce themselves to their kids and, you know, re-meet their family and see what's important in life. And I do think, I've been thinking about this, what you just said about online learning, and I think that it could be a really good thing. But what we need to do, Malcolm, is we need to have accurate curriculum, because the biggest issue that we've had in our schools is that our curriculum is so completely really bastardized from what the truth is anymore. So they take the history out, they take the civics out, and you're not really getting what the Constitution is. So when Ron talks about people and their constitutional rights, a lot of people don't know what their constitutional rights are because they haven't learned it in school anymore.
That's
so
right.
I'm hoping that if we get back to having some homeschooling, that some real responsible people will put up the curriculum, and it's not the garbage that the kids are being taught now by all the liberal teachers and professors.
Yeah. Linda, I want to go right around the table right now with all three of us and tell me, take 10 seconds each, please. Tell me, what's the biggest lesson, Linda, out of this whole thing? What's the lesson?
I think two things. I think the one is that we need to take care of our own and be more America first. And two, I think that people maybe will realize that life is more about more than possessions and cars and things like that. And it's about family and faith and the things that, you know, just are basic in life.
Okay. Ron, what's the biggest lesson out of this whole thing?
Don't forget the lessons of our past history from the 20s and 30s. In 40s with National Socialism and with fascism. And those days can easily come back and take root in the United States, given the circumstances and the character traits that we've seen on the far left.
Jay, Dr. Jay, what do you think the big lesson to you is?
Well, both Linda and Ron have really nailed it. But to me, the simplest and biggest lesson is that people have learned that they do not want their lives run by the government. They do not want to give up their freedom in exchange for so-called security. This is a lesson that will resonate, I hope, for the rest of their lives.
Wow, very good. Excellent here. Friends, you're listening there to the voices of Dr. Jay Lehrer, Linda Martinelli, Dr. Ron Martinelli. Again, Talking While Married, 8 p.m., Monday through Friday on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. As I was telling you earlier, there are some magnificent articles and op-eds, if you will, to read and blogs on the platform. You come to AmericaOutLoud.com and know that you're with family. And we appreciate you always as being here and being part of the mission. Friends, it's time to get involved and get loud.